Today I want to talk to you about some work that I did with my advisor, Andreas Haberlin. And let me start by telling you a little story. So there's a lot of data accumulating in databases everywhere. And there are a lot of productive things we could potentially do with this data. So in one particular instance here, airlines have databases of who traveled where, and hospitals have databases of who was treated for what disease. So if you're an epidemiologist and you want to study a possible malaria outbreak in Elbonia, then it would be great if you could go to the airline and the doctors and look at the data. So in our example database here, there are lots of people who went to Elbonia and were treated for malaria. However, in practice, this would not only be a privacy nightmare, this would actually be illegal in the case of healthcare data. So in practice, it's very difficult to make use of data that already exists because of privacy concerns. Now, there's some recent work in the theory community called differential privacy that offers a potential solution to this problem. Now, differential privacy allows you to answer certain queries, for instance, aggregates, and still give strong, provable privacy guarantees to your users. Specifically, it offers an upper bound on how much an adversary could learn under worst-case assumptions about any single individual in the database. Now, this would allow us to safely make use of the data without compromising our users' privacy. Indeed, there are existing systems like Pink or Aravat that you can use in practice. But there's a catch. These only work for a single centralized database. What if the data is distributed, as in the example I've shown you? So to show you what the challenges are, I first want to tell you about some straw man solutions. First, we could give all the data to a trusted third party who will execute the joint query on our behalf. But there are many cases where such a trusted third party, like trusty Tim here, doesn't exist. Second, we could use secure multi-party computation. Now, secure multi-party computation is a framework for jointly executing, in a distributed fashion, a joint function without any party learning anything except the output of the function. However, secure multi-party computation takes a lot of time for large queries, even years or decades. So we might be willing to wait a while to process our queries, but we're not willing to wait that long. Third, there are some solutions that can handle distributed queries. For example, PDDP. However, they are built for certain special queries, and they cannot handle the query from our motivating example because of the join. So we see that the challenge in getting more general queries to work, including joins, so let's take a closer look at that query. So over here, I've written it out in SQL, and I want you to focus on the join here. So what this query is trying to do is find the people who went to Elbonia and had malaria, like the motivating example earlier. Now, morally, what's going on here is a set and a section. The way we're using the join is to match up elements from the two databases on a common column. So let me walk through this closely. So let's say each database first selects out the sets that satisfy the local predicates. So in the airline's case, who went to Elbonia? And in the doctor's case, who had malaria? Next, if we intersected these two sets and find the size of the intersection, this is in fact the answer to our original query. And the nice thing about this is there are solutions which take us part of the way. A small caveat here is they're not differentially private, but we found a way to extend them to make them differentially private. So this way, we reduce the problem of answering the above query to the problem of doing differentially private set intersections. And that is what I'm going to show you today. So here's the high-level takeaway of what we did. So we built a system that first rewrites our join queries into set intersections and then executes these set intersections. So first, the researcher sends out a query to all the curators. And then they jointly execute a set intersection protocol in a distributed fashion. And finally, the parties return the result to the researchers. And importantly, these answers are differentially private. And finally, our differential privacy guarantees are with respect to every party. So a single database curator doesn't have to have any explicit trust assumptions with anybody else, not just with the person asking the questions. And the great thing about this is we can actually make use of our data. So I've told you about the scenario. The problem was that we couldn't process joins in a differentially private way, but we could convert some joins into set intersections. So for the rest of my talk, I'm going to show you the system we actually built that does this for us. Now, before I do that, I first have to tell you a little bit more about differential privacy and the private set intersection algorithm that we extend. Now, taking a closer look at differential privacy. Now, in my motivation, I emphasize that differential privacy only allows answers to aggregate questions. So let me show you an example. So let's say our researcher asks a simple question of a database curator. So how many people have malaria? Now, if you thought this was safe to answer because it's an aggregate query, and so if you naively answered 3, as in the example database here, this is actually not sufficient to protect privacy. And let me show you why. So let's say our researcher's credentials have been compromised, and the person asking the question is actually evil, right? Now, the important thing is that our evil querier here might have a lot of outside information, and we want our privacy guarantees to hold even when the querier has outside information. And for a specific example here, let's say the outside information our querier has is he knows that there's 2 people in the database that have malaria. He knows that Greg and Bob don't have malaria, and he's trying to compromise Hank's privacy. So he asks a naive question. How many people have malaria? And so if we answered 3, he now has enough information to deduce that the third person is Hank. Now, you might think that the amount of information this evil querier has is surprisingly specific, but this is the point. Even when the querier has this extremely large amount of information, we want our privacy guarantees to hold. Okay. So what differential privacy does is it adds some noise to the answer. And the effect of this noise is that it bounds how much more certain the adversary can be. So for the same question, what differential privacy does is it returns a noisy answer. And the effect of this is that the adversary can't make an exact deduction, like in the previous example. Now, there's a lot of mathematical detail that I'm omitting here, and there's a rich body of theoretical work proving why this is actually safe, and I'm glossing over all of that. But this is the key insight behind differential privacy. Okay, now switching tacks here a little bit, let me show you a protocol for computing private set intersection cardinality, and that's a mouthful, so I've abbreviated it here as PSICA. Okay, so let's say we have 2 parties, and they want to compute the size of their set intersections. I've made some simplifications here, like the databases are now sets of numbers. But let's see what we can do. So first, the airline on the left here constructs a polynomial of the database where each row is a root of this polynomial. Then he encrypts the coefficients using a homomorphic cryptosystem and sends it over to the doctor. Now, the doctor evaluates the encrypted polynomial on each row of his database to get encrypted results. Notice that if one of the rows over here, the second row, is a common element in the 2 databases, the evaluation will be 0. And otherwise, it's a random uninformative value. The doctor sends this result, these evaluations back to the airline, and the airline decrypts them and simply counts the number of zeros. In this case, this is just 1, and this is, in fact, the size of the set intersection. Now, this is not my protocol. It's previously published, but it's not differentially private. It, in fact, uses a different definition of privacy, and the privacy it protects is you don't actually learn the elements of the sets itself. However, this is not sufficient because we want differential privacy. So why isn't it differentially private? The first reason is because, well, I told you differentially private results have to be noise, and over here, the first party is learning the exact size of the intersection. But the second thing is that both parties learned the exact size of the other database. And this is, in fact, also something that we need to fix. Okay, so let's solve each of these problems in turn. So the first thing to do to add noise to the computed results The second party, when calculating the evaluations, also adds or subtracts some zeros. And so if the second party picks a sample from the noise distribution, and if the noise value is positive, he can simply encrypt some extra zeros to the result. But this doesn't actually work if the noise is a negative value. So to solve this problem, we first add a large offset of zeros, indicated by C in the diagram above. Since this offset is public, the decrypting party knows to subtract it from the final calculated result, but it allows the second party to subtract noise. So instead of encrypting C, he encrypts C minus N if N is negative. So this final way, the decrypted result is still blinded by an appropriate amount of noise, maintaining differential privacy for the result. Okay. But what about protecting the database size? Now remember, the size of the database is leaked by the degree of the polynomial. Since a doctor can see the polynomial's degree as he evaluates it, he knows the exact size of the airline's database. Again, we will use a similar solution to the first problem. We pick a noise term and add spurious roots to the polynomial. If we encode these roots correctly, they will not match with any of the elements in the doctor's set, so it preserves the correctness of the protocol, of the protocol's answer, while still confounding the size of the database. This works similarly to the solution to the first problem. Okay, so that's our blinded noise private set intersection protocol. So let me take a closer look at one specific query over here. And over here, what we're trying to do is we're trying to calculate the size of an intersection, but over here, we're intersecting on two columns, A and on B. And we're calculating the union of over here, which decomposes into three set intersections. Now, if we naively ran three set intersections, what we would get is three times as much noise. And this is bad because we're losing query utility here to protect privacy when really all we need is just one noise term. So we have another primitive which we call denoise combined renoise. And this is implemented in secure multi-party computation. And what it does is effectively takes in the three results, the three noise terms that were added in the private set intersection round, and returns one final result with the three noise terms removed and a new single noise term added. Now, I told you that secure multi-party computation is very expensive, and this is true. But the reason we weren't using it for the join is that the encoding the entire database in secure multi-party computation would be far too big. But to do the simple arithmetic and noising is, in fact, possible in secure multi-party computation. Okay, so we built a system called DJoin to answer queries differentially privately. But before we actually can get there, we have to solve several other challenges. So for example, we have to maintain a privacy budget, we have to do a sensitivity analysis, we have to manage databases on our local nodes. And I'd love to tell you about all of them, but we don't have that much time, so I'm going to focus on query rewriting today. But they are in the paper. Okay. So let's take a look at this example query. Over here, what we're trying to do is count the number of people who had a diagnosis of malaria, but also who were common to these two databases. And we're trying to match them either on their social security number or some other ID. So let's say we had our databases in a local centralized setting and we could execute it in a straightforward manner. So first thing we would do is we'd join the two tables and then we'd select out those users that had a diagnosis of malaria. And then we'd do two selections, one where the social security numbers matched and then one where the IDs matched. Then we take the union and the size of this union, and that would be the result. However, we don't actually have joins here. If these two databases have separate curators who don't trust each other, we don't actually have the capability to do this join. All we have are our set intersection primitive and our denoise combined renoise primitive. So let's see what we could do here. So the first thing we could do is we notice that the diagnosis of malaria is really only relevant to A's database. So we can push it through the join and do it locally on A. Next thing we can do is project out the two social security number columns and then the two ID columns, and then run our Psica algorithm to calculate the size of the set and the sections. And then we could use denoise combined renoise to remove the noise term. Now, if you look carefully at this, I've made a slight mistake, which we'll shortly correct, which is that we're double counting because you can't calculate the union with just the two sums of intersections. And so we have a third set in the section. Now, what's nice about denoise combined renoise is it doesn't matter if there's two set in the sections or three set in the sections, we're still going to get the same utility out of our query because we can remove as many noise terms as we need and add only one at the end. Okay, so I've shown you a small example of query rewriting to make use of set in the sections. But you might wonder when this actually works. So this works if the WHERE clause contains arbitrary operations on local databases. Well, this is because we can just push it through the join. But it also works on conjunctions and disjunctions of equalities across databases, and certain inequalities and numeric comparisons across databases. Now, I have a formal list of the rewrite rules in the paper, but briefly to recap what we can't do, some joins are actually not differentially private because the sensitivity is unbounded. And since we want to provide differentially private results, we can't actually do those. But there's also others that we can't do because we can't efficiently encode them as set in the sections. And for example, one instance is substrings. So if you have two strings, one on database A and one on database B, and we want to find if one of them is a substring of another, we actually couldn't find a way to encode these as set in the sections. Okay, so I've shown you our primitives, Psica and DCR, and I've also shown you a little bit about query rewriting. So you might wonder now how this actually works in reality. And so there's a bunch of questions you could ask. So how long did the queries take? How well does this scale? How many set in the sections do we have to compute per query, et cetera? We built an experimental prototype of DJoin using just commodity machines, MySQL databases on local machines. We also used some components that were developed, like Fairplay MP, Paillet Crispo System, and the Psica algorithm were based on Mike Friedman et al. And Kistner Song's previous work. Okay. So a key question you might ask is, how does the performance scale with the size of the database? And as I will show you shortly, most of our computation time is in computing these set in the sections. So let's first take a look at a micro benchmark of the set in the section operator itself. So we performed an experiment with various database sizes. On the x-axis, we have the number of elements in each of the two databases, and on the y-axis, the computation time. The first thing you'll notice in this graph is that it's almost linear. And indeed, it's n log log n, which is very close. The second thing you'll notice is that the y-axis is measured in minutes. So this is actually not suitable for interactive use, but it may be suitable for offline analysis. But there's one more thing that you can't see on this graph, which is that we found that this was almost embarrassingly parallel. So we just sped it up with throwing four cores at the problem, and we got almost a 4x speed up. Okay, so let's take a look at some example queries. So in the table above, the first column shows the example queries that we ran on our system, and the column on the right shows the number of set in the section operations required for executing that query. So now, I'm not going to go over each of these queries, but let me highlight some key points here. The first thing you'll notice is that it's basically SQL, and this is good for usability for people who've been using databases for a while. Next, you'll notice that all the queries begin with noisy count, and this is because we can only release aggregates. We can't release, for example, actual names of people. Now, the second thing I want to highlight here is there's a substring test in the fifth query. And I told you we couldn't support substring tests, but again, this one is local to A's database. So we actually support full SQL syntax on local databases. And finally, you'll notice that the last query has a lot of set intersections, and this is actually because of the inequality test. So encoding inequalities turns out to be computable with set intersections, but at a fairly high cost. So I'm skimming over the exact queries here, but I want to turn to the actual performance of executing these queries. So how long do these queries take? They take between 1 and 8 hours on databases with 15,000 rows. But the nice part is that this can be parallelized with more cores or machines. You can really throw cores at this problem if you care about speed. But let me reiterate for comparison here is that the previous best known way to do differential private joins was to sort of naively implement it in secure multi-party computation. And we actually tried that. And it took 40 seconds for 8-row databases and scaled quadratically. And the reason I'm quoting 8 rows here is that we couldn't get it to run for 9-row databases because it ran out of memory and crashed, right? So secure multi-party computation is just, it's far too expensive to do anything with real databases. Okay, so I started out by telling you about all this data that we couldn't use, but djoin is the first distributed query processor that supports join queries. And this is a new tool in our toolbox for doing things with all this data that we couldn't use before. Right. It's based on two primitives, BNPSICA and DCR, which I showed you roughly how they work today. And the evaluation shows that it's not fast enough for interactive use, but it could be fast enough for offline data analysis. And further, you can throw cores at this problem. Okay, that's it for my talk today. And there's more information, including the paper itself, up on the project website here. And I will have a poster later today, so I'm happy to take questions as well.
Anandjai from Yale University. So our network. My question is, your system can now support counting queries such as some queries, right? Is it correct? So the reason why I ask this question is based on my understanding two differential privacy. I think it's possible to support such queries, right? In distributed database system.
So your question is, I showed you some counting queries, and you were asking about some queries.
Right.
So it should be, so here's the example queries. So it should be fairly simple to extend our system to some queries. Mm-hmm. Over here, we focused on getting any queries out because they hadn't been done before, but our system should extend to executing some queries as well.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, I'm Asad Moshe from USC. My question is that how can you do denoising, but the adversarial entity cannot do that and get the information?
Right. So the reason we can denoise is, so we have two parties, and one of these parties remembers how much noise they added to the result. Now, that party is, this is a secret they're going to take to the grave, right? Because if they reveal that, then the answer is now no longer differentially private. But they can reveal that to this black box, which is secure multi-party computation, because the one thing that secure multi-party computation guarantees is that the inputs will not be revealed when the computation finishes. Only the final output will be revealed.
Who owns this box? Is this shared between two entities?
Right. So secure multi-party computation is jointly computed by all the parties, and this is a fairly well-developed toolbox. So it's a distributed protocol that's executed jointly by all the parties.
Jeff Kenning, Harvey Mudd College. I don't know anything about differential privacy, but I am evil. And I'm wondering, why can't I repeat the query many times and then use statistics to remove most of the noise?
Right. So what differential privacy does is it maintains a privacy budget, and every time you ask a query, you sort of have to pay from this budget, and eventually the budget is exhausted. So the amount of noise that's added to the query is proportional to how much of the budget you use. So if you, for example, use your entire budget in one query, you can get less noise, and this is still differentially, you still get the differential privacy guarantees.
I'm Henry Corgan Gibbs from Yale University, and I wanted to ask, it looked from your first chart like the amount of time that a query takes depends on how many rows I have of a certain type. So are there timing attacks that you've looked at that could, where the sort of the rows in my database will reveal something based on how long it takes to do the computation?
So what will be, okay, so,
did you understand my question? Should I? So, for example, if my database has no people with malaria in it, mm-hmm. it takes 2 seconds to run. If there's one person right. in the database who has malaria, it takes 10 minutes to run.
Right.
So when we're running this operation.
Right, right. So the first thing we do is that we pad out the length of the set in the section to the number of people in the database. So, you know, whether zero people in the database have malaria or every single person in the database has malaria, it's going to take as much time. Now, there still is the sort of slightly less powerful timing attack of you can learn how many elements are there in our database, which is why we add noise to the total polynomial size and hence the computation time as well.
Thanks.
Yeah. Hi, Mike Freeman, Princeton. I guess I had a, given that this is a systems venue rather than a theory venue, one of the Achilles heels of differential privacy is this, both the amount of noise that the developer is supposed to add and the privacy budget that you just talked about, in the sense that you could imagine DOSing the system by, I have an issue a bunch of queries, I use up the privacy budget, and now nobody can query the system ever again in the future. For the most part, the theoreticians have said, oh well, these are our fundamental limitations. It's almost seen as a negative result. So I was wondering what you think in terms of how this would be pragmatically used. What's the process you'd think of managing to protect against security attacks, which are basically DOS attacks, et cetera?
Right. So the first thing is, you know, there are many bad outcomes and some are worse than others. And getting a, you know, denial of service attacks and nobody can ever ask questions, again, of this database is still a better scenario than a privacy breach, right? If our user's privacy is compromised, that's a far worse scenario. And yes, I acknowledge that if a malicious query asks a whole bunch of queries and uses up the privacy database, this is bad. So you'd probably have to very carefully vet the questions first. And I think that's okay because we're really talking about really sensitive databases where getting access is hard. And you'd probably have to wait a long time just to, you know, get access to this database. So having the queries sort of vetted or at least rate limited is not a terrible solution.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Ingo Weber from NICTA. I'm wondering if you add noise to the IDs and then you perform the check, isn't there a fairly high chance that you're actually matching the wrong records with each other?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Okay, in your example, you had the social security numbers in the flight database, where I don't usually add my social security number, but anyway, and the social security number in the health database, and if you add noise to both of those IDs, isn't there a fair chance that you end up matching the wrong person from the one database to
the wrong person
of the other
okay,
database?
Okay, so the first thing is that the exact intersection is calculated. So we're not adding noise to individual records. What we're doing is once the exact intersection is calculated, we're adding some noise to the aggregate size of the intersection. So, you know, I'm not adding noise to your social security numbers or to the column of social security numbers and then computing the intersection. I'm computing the intersection and then to the final total, say if it's 52, I'm going to noise it and then return, say, you know, 59. So we're not actually noising individual records in the database. Thank you.